All right, guys, welcome once again to your High Gravity Mail podcast. I'm Brad Howard, and today I've got a very, very special guest. You know, we've gotten a lot of comments because I was asking around some of the topics that people wanted us to cover in this specific podcast, and one of the big things that come up was procrastination, what it is, and how to actually overcome it. You know, procrastination is kind of a big deal, but my guest today has some insights that you may want to pay attention to, as well as what procrastination actually is versus what the myths are, as well as a few strategies that you may be able to put together in your own life. Now, just to let you know, this is probably going to be a little bit more skewed to people that own businesses or maybe want to create businesses or have, you know, specific projects in mind that they're looking to do. It's going to help out all the way around, but it's more geared toward this type of a thing. So, with that being said, I want to introduce my friend Zach Broman, and he is going to take care of a lot of this stuff for you. So I appreciate you being on, buddy.
It's my pleasure, Brad.
Cool. So let's get it started off really quickly with some of the myths actually surrounding procrastination. Because, you know, as you and I have discussed before you even got on this call, you know, for a lot of men, procrastination actually makes you feel like less of a man. You know, you're kind of reactive, you're not proactive. And, you know, so if we can get a handle on some of the myths and what it is and what it isn't, that may help some guys out.
Well, the first myth, I think the biggest myth and the one that I, you know, suffered with for years and years is that you procrastinate because you're lazy. And I think, you know, first of all, everybody, you know, procrastinates to a certain extent. Everybody, you know, puts something off. But it has less to do with, you know, it's not your work ethic or you know, discipline or willpower or any of that stuff. It's some form of resistance that you have to getting something done. And the resistance could be caused by a number of different things. It could be perfectionism, you know, indecision. It could be just lack of focus, that, you know, having difficulty paying attention, which is something, again, that I struggled with. Could be feeling overwhelmed, and or it could be just a, you know, lack of drive, a lack of enthusiasm for the project. So when you take care of those, when you eliminate the resistance that you have to getting things done, you stop procrastinating. It's not a matter of you need to force yourself to do something you don't want to do. The metaphor that I like to use is, you know, if you were going for a walk and you had pebbles in your shoe, right? You could tell you, well, you know, just push through the pain, you know, just use willpower and just walk, you know, go walk for a mile, and you know, eventually you'll get there. And, you know, if you do that, you're going to resent it, and you're going to, you know, you're going to want to stop the whole time. And even if you end up getting there, you're going to hate it. You're not going to want to repeat that experience. Whereas if you just take the pebbles out, walking is not that big a deal. Right. And that's what I teach people to do, is that, you know, in your work life, work often feels like this thing that we resent and we don't want to do and we want to avoid at all costs. And it's not work per se that you want to avoid. It's just certain aspects of work or things we've come to associate with work that make it feel that way. And if we can remove those, then we lose our desire to procrastinate. Then we don't need willpower. We just, you know, want to get things done.
So basically what you're saying is that in your point of view and from all the research you've done on this topic, that in its essence, procrastination is basically the avoidance of pain.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah.
And totally understandable. And so rather than, you know, facing the pain, which is what, you know, 99% of people, you know, everyone's going to tell you, right? Oh, you need to focus. You need to, you know, push through. You need to get it done, which is about, or facing the pain. You can remove the source of that pain, and then things become much easier and much smoother.
Yeah, I mean, it makes total sense. It's, you know, what we're finding, at least some of the research I've looked at, that, you know, pain is pain. Emotional pain and physical pain both actually, you know, hit the same areas of the brain. And in fact, some of the more interesting things I've seen, they're actually starting to use anti-inflammatories and things that, you know, blunt pain response. For things like depression and stuff like that. So it's really interesting that, you know, kind of positioning procrastination as an avoidance of pain, it actually does make sense. It actually makes a lot of sense the more I think about it, you know, especially based on some of my own things that I've had to basically power through. So,
the school that we've done, you know, this school sort of teaches you to associate work with pain. I remember just an example. When I was a kid, I loved reading. I loved reading fiction, and my mom would tell stories that I always on the go and that sort of thing. And then I remember high school where I had to read for English class, and I just hated it, you know, and I resisted it, and it was, you know, something I had to do. And it took me a full 10 years after I finished high school to start reading fiction again, you know, start reading novels again. I always read nonfiction because it, you know, it's something that drew me in. But, you know, I was basically trained to associate reading, which is something I used to do for pleasure, with, you know, obligation and resentment. And that's right. And I think a lot of people feel that way about work. I mean, Brad, you're an entrepreneur, so you, you know, you enjoy what you do more than most people do. But I'm sure you had, you know, especially when you're starting out, you have that resistance where you feel like work has got to feel, you know, it's got to be hard, right? It's got to be painful, or else somehow you feel like you don't deserve success or something like that. And that's just not the case. The people that I know that are most successful, they don't feel like work is working in the morning, and they want to, you know, play the game. They want to, you know, create products and start making sales, and, you know, if you look at the most successful people, period, like people like, I'm continuing to work for the money. They've got all the money they could need, so they continue to work for other reasons, and that's what I'm talking about finding.
Yeah, no, it makes total sense as far as that's concerned. I mean, especially talking about entrepreneurship and in the beginning, the things that happen. I remember, you know, for a fact, there are a lot of aspects of the business that I was having to do myself that I'm not very good at all. And in fact, anything that requires organization of any kind, I just really steer away from it. And it feels like I'm chewing off my own arm in order to try to do that, because it's not a strength of mine. It's not natural. It doesn't flow. And so, you know, as you go along, you know, my goal was always to, once you get to a certain income level, to find somebody to do all this arm chewing stuff, you know, to get that off my plate so I could do the stuff I liked. And that, you know, that makes total sense. But yeah, in the beginning, in a lot of these
exactly
things, it's like
you at a certain point. Mm-hmm. Well, everyone sort of thinks of this 4-hour work week, or sort of outsourcing everything and just managing the process. And that's great, but, you know, it takes a bit of work to get to that point. You can't start there. And I'm talking about how you can get to that point without it being, you know, something that you just grit your teeth and bear, but something that you actually start to enjoy.
Sure. I mean, and all of this kind of makes sense if we're going to translate it to other things, like, you know, a large majority of my audience is really interested in diet and fitness, but it's kind of the same thing. You would never procrastinate doing something that you knew was going to work. And I think that's the hardest thing for a lot of people, is that uncertainty that something, you know, it kind of sucks at it as it is going through that process. But at the same time, the unknown of knowing that there's a possibility that you're going to do all this work and it's not going to work. I mean, that's a big deal. I run into that with tons of other things, not only just diet and fitness. So just kind of wanted to, I guess, throw that in.
Yeah, true. There are certain things to make. I mean, if you look at the difference between work and games, they're not actually that much different in terms of, you know, you got to pay attention to both of them, and you're investing in, and you, so, you know, depending on the game, you're solving problems and you're moving forward. But one thing that games has is they have that certainty that, you know, if you keep playing, you're gonna move ahead, you're gonna make progress. And that's one of the things about starting your own business or writing a book or something like that, is you're not seeing that same progress.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the that's true. A lot of the things that you do in life don't really have like a status bar to let you know you've hit goal number one, and, you know, or, you know, like when you're in a racing game or something, you hit the checkpoint and you get more time or something like that. So you actually have this positive feedback based on the things that you're doing. But, you know, it doesn't really work like that in life for a lot of these things. I mean, you're pretty much buried until all of a sudden something happens.
Unless you create something like that. And that's actually great that you made that point, because that's exactly what I do with people, is I show them how to measure that progress and how to basically exactly have a quantifiable way so you can look back and you can see what you've accomplished each day. Right. And when you can look, see it. When I say see, I mean see with your eyes. I mean visually see progress. It's not just know that you've got something done, but actually see it. When you, every single time you invest some energy in, you see some reward, the reward being that you're making progress, that's when it becomes fun and it becomes exciting. It's the putting energy in. It's like, again, if you're talking about working out, if you keep doing the same exercise over and over and over again and you're not getting any stronger, any bigger or more defined or whatever your goals are, it's going to be pretty discouraging to keep going back and trying to do the same thing. Sure. So what I do with people is I teach them ways that they can basically quantify, you know, what they've accomplished and quantify not just, progress in terms of getting things done, but also quantify their progress in terms of, self-improvement and that sort of thing, so that they, you get that same rush, you get that same, I mean, productivity itself is actually one of the most pleasurable, it's a deep human need.
Sure.
To feel productive. I mean, you know the feeling, that taking care of business feeling, like you just feel good to get stuff done. You cross like five things off your to-do list and you feel high, you feel, almost invincible. And if you go too many days or months or, years at that feeling, it's got to be like pulling teeth to go into work. So my goal is to make sure that you get that feeling every single day, every single hour, really, that you invest in moving your projects forward.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've talking about needs and things like that. I've actually looked over a couple of things where there are a couple of psychologists that are actually making the leap of taking Maslow's hierarchy of needs, where you start with think basic things like food, shelter, all that type of stuff, safety, and you keep moving up, and actually turning that upside down and saying that all of this stuff is great, but you can't do any of this stuff unless you're actually feel like you're contributing somehow, some way, and it has to kind of start there. And then all the other things can kind of fall into place, which is a little bit strange. It's a little bit different view, but it kind of starts the other way around. But, we do know, pretty much for a fact that most men identify very strongly with their career and how well they're doing. And it's tied almost inextricably into their self-esteem, with, some other things, making smaller contributions. So, I mean, this stuff is strong. So let's give an example of some of the things that you put together as far as being able to measure and quantify some of these small changes on a day-to-day basis.
Okay, great. Well, here's the problem that I had was a horrible problem with procrastination, and I'm now 37 years old, so we're rewinding just under a year ago, that I was trying to get things done and just having a horrible time of it, spending a lot of time, watching shows late at night and telling my wife I was working, and then, lying to her and telling her I'd been up, and it really hurt my self-esteem, and I had a lot of doubt about my future. I mean, I projected forward and I was like, how am I going to get, anything done? I have a lot of envy about people who could, accomplish things. And so I figured, I needed to, if I could start getting some little successes, if I could start getting some little wins, then I would, it would start to feel better, it would start to build my motivation, and it would make it easier to continue. Yeah. And, one of the things that I did, this is one of the best things you can do if you want to be more productive, particularly if you've been procrastinating for a while, and that is I committed to working fewer hours every day. Mm-hmm. And now this sounds like things that's like, it's sort of the opposite of what we think is going to work, right? You want to get more done, work more hours. And a couple things happen when we commit to working a lot of hours. First of all, it's intimidating and we don't even get started, which is what often happens. So what happened with me is I spend the whole day sort of putting things off, or, when I talk about procrastination, there's sort of, just an aside, there's two kinds: the complete avoidance, where you're avoiding by, you know, watching TV or playing video games or organizing your sock drawer. And then there's, you know, sort of pseudo work where you're keeping busy, but you're not actually driving things forward. And that's a form of procrastination as well.
Sure.
So every day, you know, at the end of the day, I would get nothing done. I'd have, you know, barely anything accomplished. I'd feel guilty and I'd feel stressed. And I'd tell myself, all right, well, I'm going to go to bed. I'm going to get a good night's sleep. I'm going to get up tomorrow morning. I'm going to put in a good 8 hours of work and I'm going to make up for today because I didn't get anything done today. And of course, I get up in the next morning and I sit down at my computer and I think, oh God, 8 hours? I got to be here for 8 hours doing something I don't really want to do. Well, start by checking my email or checking Facebook or, you know, so I would never, it was so intimidating to do 8 hours of work every day that I wouldn't get started. So I actually, for myself at that time, the number I came up with that worked for me was 2 hours. It's like, if I could do 2 hours of work, and when I say where I'm going to, you know, you have to do it in a particular way. You can't just do 2 hours of sort of frittering away kind of work, but 2 hours of good, focused work a day. And then I told myself, once that, you know, once those 2 hours are done, I'm done for the day and I'm going to go enjoy myself and spend time with my family and don't feel like all my time's structured. And, you know, sort of one thing that I did was, you know, that made a big difference. The other happens is, you know, one is, you know, when you schedule too much time, you're intimidated and you don't get started. The other is that you pace yourself. And, you know, if you're running a marathon, it makes sense, right? For the first, you know, first few miles or whatever, you want to run, you know, fairly slowly because you want to save your energy. But when we pace ourselves with work, you know, mental work, we're not, you know, you're not typing in slow motion or anything like that. You pace yourself by trying to conserve your focus, you know, your focus muscles, your attention muscles. So you work in a much more distracted way. And that ends up being much less satisfying. You get far less done. And it sort of sets a precedent for the rest of the day. So what I found was 2 hours, you know, it's like, again, if you go to the gym, right? Some of the best workouts I've had are when I'm under time crunch. And I'm like, I usually work out for maybe 90 minutes or an hour, and I've got 45 minutes before, you know, I got to pick up my kids or something like that. And I start off intense and I work out intense, and I actually get much more of a workout than I would have if I got there and said, okay, I got 2 hours to get things done. Let's take it easy. So actually working less, you know, really, really helps. And it all helps you know when you're done. So we talked about quantifying. We talked about when you're done. So a lot of, if I ask you, you know, what do you want to get done today? You would, you know, not you necessarily, because you're an quite experienced and you're doing well. A lot of people don't have a clear idea of what they want to get done, so they just think as much as possible. Mm-hmm. So every time you try and get done as much as possible, and you always feel adequate. You always feel like you didn't get enough done. It's fairly common. And then what happens? You can't enjoy your free time. You can't rest and refresh for the next day. You have this sort of uneasy feeling like you're not accomplishing enough. Whereas if you can quantify, look, how much I want to get done? Well, if I focus for 2 hours, I want to get done, only what I can get done in 2 hours.
Yeah.
Right? Then when the are done, you're done. And then you're free to go off and relax and refresh. And some studies done a number of years ago, and they looked at writers. They looked at famous writers, and they said, all without exception, famous writers who are basically totally independent and they're incentivized to get things done as quickly as possible, they work 3 to 4 hours a day in the morning, and then they take the rest of the time off to refresh and recuperate. And if you're not, defining what it is that you want to accomplish each day, and then you're not fully resting, you're not fully recuperating, then you're coming back at things. You know, you feel like you're constantly in this mud of kind of working, kind of not. So that's, you know, I talked about 2 hours. Now that was an extreme for me because that was, you know, at that time, that's what I need. It psychologically to get started. That 2 hours very quickly, it became so enjoyable. It became such a fun part of my day where I'd actually, you know, I'd start getting, you know, high. I'd start feeling like, oh my God, I'm actually making progress. I'm writing. And that too stretched to three, stretched to four. And now I do a little bit more than that, but it's what I love doing now, as opposed to something that I feel like is imposed on me from the outside, which is something that I sort of resist like crazy.
Yeah. So let me reiterate something really quickly rephrase that. You're not saying that you were actually getting high, smoking weed while you were working, trying to get the stuff done. The actual action of getting things done was providing a high.
Real high to getting things done. There's no question about it.
Yeah. Okay.
That releases dopamine.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify that. I know some people would take that the wrong way. I mean, they, you know, they're like, oh, that means I can get high and get work done.
That wouldn't go so well.
Yeah. You know what? I'm not sure, you know, if you talk about this, I'm probably pretty sure you do, but let's talk about how to figure out what to focus on. You know, so you've got your two hours of work, and actually, you know, it's really interesting, you know, I figured out that my day is, I'll give you an example of how my day works. And, you know, we can kind of extrapolate that over to, you know, basically how to figure out how things go. So like for me, it's about the same thing. I've got about 2 hours every day that I've structured, you know, an hour and a half to 2 hours that is mine, right? It's my time. And I do whatever. I sit down And I figure out, and I usually do this ahead of time, I figure out what's the highest leverage activity I can be working on. And I only work on that during that 2 hours for the whole time until it gets done. And that happens between the hours of like 8:30 in the morning until 10:30. And then I go to the gym to kind of get refreshed. And then lunchtime and after that is when I do things that other people need me for. So if I'm doing interviews, or if I have a call with, you know, employees or people that work for us, or, you know, if I'm doing calls with vendors and things like that, or any type of phone work, which tends to be a lot nowadays, that happens, you know, after, you know, 12 o'clock. But I always budget. I always have that 2 hours every single day that I work on that really high leveraged activity that, you know, I know that if I get this accomplished, it's going to make it the biggest difference in, you know, our business and in, you know, in my day and in for me personally. So that's how I've got it structured. I'm not sure how you may have it structured or how you even teach it, but that's just kind of an example of how I go.
It took me a little while, but I came to a similar thing. Basically, I divide everything into, there's two columns, right? There's you know, immediate stuff that's going to bring, you know, what's going to bring cash into my business today? You know, what customer service stuff do I need to take care of? You know, talking my list, that sort of thing. And then the other column is long term. What can I, you know, what can I do to grow my business where I want it to be in the future? And this could be, you know, some sort of systematizing, you know, turning something that, you know, turning it into a system, or, you know, product creation, or, you know, something like that. And basically, I had this complex thing with a whole bunch of columns, and I found that I just wasn't using it. So when I put things in basically those two columns, made sure I did something from each column every day, and that for me, what I had to do was I had to alternate days which column I started from. So if I sometimes, let's say for example, I'd start from column two, right? I'd start from working on long-term stuff. So I'm writing, you know, I'm working on product creation, something that's not going to come out for a few months, but I know it's going to, you know, really help people and it's going to really, you know, take my business to the next level. So if I did that every single day, I'd start moving the things from the, you know, the daily maintenance tasks. They start getting pushed to the next day and pushed to the next day and pushed to the next day. You know, you start noticing yourself moving the same thing over column every single day. So I thought, okay, well, tomorrow I start with the immediate maintenance stuff, and it, you know, things that take a shorter time to complete, you know, writing an email or you know, a newsletter or a blog post or something like that. And it sounds very similar to what you do. Is basically you divide your work into two separate things. There's, you know, daily maintenance, take care of your business today, and then there's long-term, you know, long-term growth, and you make sure that you do part of those each day. Your system is great. You make sure that you book those several hours for long-term growth. As I say, I find what's difficult for me, or what I found in the past of people, is just the shifting of gears. It's not that I mind doing one or the other. It's that once I get started on one, I kind of just want to stick, you know, I kind of get on a roll. I want to stick with that one. So I have to make sure, you know, if you look at, you know, if anyone, you can start by just tracking what do you do in a day, or look at your to-do list and look how, you know, some teams keep repeating, what are you avoiding? Get that thing done first tomorrow. You know, start with the thing you've been avoiding first. And there's been a bit of you know, controversy about whether to start with the easiest thing, start with the hardest thing. You know, the research I've seen says, you know, if you start with the hardest thing, the thing that you're avoiding most, and you get it done with for the day, and done again, like something like, as you say, if you're creating a product or something like that, you're not going to feel done. You're not going to, you know, feel finished, you know, for a few months. So putting in 2 hours of focused work, 2 hours of focused writing, is that's your way of quantifying it. But once that's done, you're rewarded by doing things that are, you know, more pleasant and more and easier, as opposed to the other way around. If you start with the easiest thing, then you're, you know, punished. You're finishing. It's like, congratulations, you just finished, you know, cleaning the floor. Now you get to clean the toilet.
Right.
Oh, you clean the toilet. Congratulations. Now you get to clean out the septic tank. It's like, you know, it's like each thing, you sort of dread finishing it because it means going on to something even less pleasant, where it's like, you know, if you go the other way around. I structure my workouts the same way. I imagine you do too. I do cardio, probably for me, the sort of most, takes the most effort. It's most difficult. So I do that right off the bat. And then I do weights, and then I do stretching. And stretching is just, you know, bliss, because all the hard stuff's over with. And, you know, it's kind of my reward. And then when I look back at, it's easier to go the next day because my experience is very positive, versus if, you know, if I started with the easiest thing and ended with the hardest thing, it's like a, you know, that anxiety having to do the hardest thing sort of stays with you the entire time. So off tangent a little bit, but does that sort of give you some ideas of how to focus on?
Yeah, you know, it's there's kind of different schools of thought. Just like you were saying, it's kind of like the you know, eat your meal first or eat dessert first. Mm-hmm. It kind of depends on which way works better for you. I mean, I'm kind of the same way. And I figured that, I found out that certain things that used to be things I did not enjoy, I actually enjoy now. So, you know, if I'm going to do cardio or something like that, I do that first. And I don't do really aggressive cardio. It's just basically walking or something like that, more just to warm up. And then I'll do my weight training because I enjoy that more. And then if I want some more cardio after that, or some type of activity, I mean, the gym I've got, they've got a basketball court, so I can go shoot hoops. So it actually works in order of things I hate doing first, moving down to things I really enjoy doing in that way. You know, I've seen other guys do it differently, but for me, that type of thing works really well. And my day is structured the same way too, because, you know, I enjoy doing interviews. I enjoy talking to people. I enjoy, you know, helping, you know, our team out with different problems that we have and things like that. The things I don't necessarily enjoy, until I get in a flow state, which is why that 2 hours is important, is, you know, things like writing blog posts or writing sales videos, or, you know, sometimes just creating videos. I mean, it takes me, I have to kind of get up for that stuff, if it makes sense. It's like I have to come in and prime myself to do it. And then I do it. And while I'm doing it and I hit a flow state, I'm good. But, you know, the important thing about that is, so when we talked about how my day was set up and versus systematizing versus long term, like my, or immediacy versus, you know, long term, you know, my day is pretty much set up such that, you know, all my long term stuff is done first. And I have no distractions. Like, I don't have email on. I don't have anything. So I essentially cut myself off from the world. And then that gym time is like the, because you were saying that you sometimes you like to keep going. That gym time is like my reset. So, you know, I get to reset, and get out of that mode and get into, I guess what I call, fire prevention or fire putting out mode, because the more immediate things I handle in the afternoon, where, you know, we have immediate problems and things like that that, you know, people, our team can't handle and they need some input on, you know, then I'll jump in on that type of stuff. But that seems to be how I work best, you know, to be honest. And it flies. And it flies. That's a bad thing. Yeah. I was just joking about it today with a couple guys, you know, at 7 a.m. at the dog park. We were talking about how back in the day, when 5 o'clock hit, you were all happy. You were like, oh yeah, I'm off work, I'm done. And when 5 o'clock hits now, I'm like, crap, where'd all the time go? I don't have enough time to get anything done anymore. And I'm only focused on really big things now. So it's interesting.
One of the other ways to do it, rather than think of the sort of least pleasant, most pleasant, is to start with the most flow inducing. I actually talk about this in one of my programs.
Let's talk about flow really quickly, just in case people don't understand what that is, and because it is a real psychological thing. It's not just something somebody made up.
Yeah. So flow is when your attention is so engaged in what you're doing that it becomes a sort of peak experience where there's no room left in your mind for doubts and insecurities and self-consciousness and that sort of thing. And this was, I think, Csikszentmihalyi who first came up with flow. This was the birth of positive psychology. Positive psychology means let's stop just studying people that are depressed, messed up, but let's look at, you know, people, you know, normal people and what makes us happy. And what I found was that a life filled with experiences of flow, this deep engagement with what you're doing, this total immersion in the action of what you're doing, is so pleasurable that those are the people that are happiest, people that have a lot of flow experiences in life. So certain things are going to lend themselves more to flow than others, deep focus than others. You know, one is a certain amount of continuity. So writing, for example, for me, gets me in flow much more than doing something, you know, where I have to shift gears a lot to look something up on the internet and then call somebody and then email someone. That's never going to get me into that state of deep focus. So that's what flow is. And a lot of what I teach is that there is a science how you can get into flow, and there are a few different characteristics or ways to set up your work so that you get there as quickly as possible. And I think something that you alluded to is most of the effort, all the effort comes in getting started. Mm-hmm. I talked to a friend about kayaking recently. He said 90% of your energy is getting up to speed. Once you're up to speed, it's like you know, dipping your paddle in the water. It's easy as can be to maintain momentum. And it's the same thing with focus, the same thing with flow, is getting started. If there needs to be effort in that, the effort is up front. But then, as you've experienced it before, Brad, you know what I'm talking about. It's like something clicks in your brain, and it becomes easier to focus than not to focus, in a way. You just choose to sort of keep going, and as it also, you know, releases dopamine. It releases, I'll talk about it. There's some other neurotransmitters involved as well. But so one of the characteristics of, or one thing that leads to flow, deep focus, is getting frequent feedback and rewards from what you're doing. Okay. And that's one of the things that I think is fairly, you know, quite often ignored when we talk about flow. And so, you know, I asked myself, well, how can I make things? I had difficulty focusing. I'd sit down and my mind would get pulled off all kinds of different sides. And then what would actually happen was I'd work for a while and I just still wasn't focused. You know, 20 minutes later, I still couldn't focus and I'd give up. And it would be a negative experience and I would avoid working even more. And it's, you know, again, if we're going back to the gym, if you decided to, you know, lift 100 pounds every day and you, you know, not in very good shape. Come and you try and lift 400 pounds and you fail, and you come back and you fail again, and you come back day after day. You know, going to the gym is not going to be a fun experience. It's going to be associated with failure. And that's what happened with me with focus. So what I needed was something that would boost my ability to focus. It would make it easier for me to focus. And what I found was that there are really, you know, two ways that you can focus your mind. One is through pushing your focus on something. So using effort to direct in. Right now you could, you know, put your focus on your big toe and all of a sudden become aware of that. You move it around. But the other way is by pulling your focus, right? Certain things in the environment pull your focus into them naturally. You know, if someone ran in the room with a gun right now, your focus would be right on that person. You know, the danger is one of them. But another thing that pulls our focus is a task that leads to immediate reward. Is very easy to focus on. And you look at video games. Video games are the masters of this. I call it the challenge reward loop. If you follow a challenge by an immediate reward, the challenge itself becomes enjoyable and becomes easy to focus on. And, you know, even kids with the worst ADD or ADHD in the world, they can play video games. They don't have problems focusing on that because the rewards, and by rewards, I'll talk about what that means in a second, they pull focus. Right. They pull focus into what you're doing. And, you know, once you get going you know, your attention gets stronger, your focus gets better, there are natural rewards to working that you start to get. But we sometimes need to put some artificial rewards in there in order to prime the pump, in order to get to that place. It's like, it's like, you know, weightlifting or exercise. You know, what mostly happens is people start going to the gym or whatever because they, you know, because they want to lose weight or they want to get stronger or whatever it is. But then they start to see some progress and they lose a little weight and they start looking better and they get those endorphins. They start feeling better and they get those rewards, you know, right away. And that's what starts to motivate them. So let me talk a bit about rewards now. Does that sound good?
Yeah, sure. But go ahead, man.
So a reward is basically there are different types of rewards, and there are tangible rewards like a, you know, piece of chocolate or some drink or something that sort of pleases your senses, listen to music, that sort of thing. But actually more powerful than those type of rewards are what I call symbolic rewards. Mm-hmm. Right. Different circuits in the brain. So money is a symbolic reward, right? You can't eat it, but it's a symbol that you have more freedom, that you have, you know, the ability to purchase things, you know, increase in status, increase in comfort, whatever, symbolic reward. The score in a video game is watching your score go up is a symbolic reward. Seeing your status bar go up is a symbolic reward. Getting a high mark on a test in school is a symbolic reward. And all things, they release dopamine in your brain.
Right.
Okay. Circuits that symbolic rewards go, it's called secondary reinforcers in, you know, for psychology. They follow a circuit in your brain that releases dopamine and also releases another chemical called acetylcholine, which actually makes it easier to focus. Mm-hmm. So you set up this loop in your brain where, okay, and this is how I do, and this is, you know, what I teach students, is you're gonna here's a technique where you can use this way. You take a piece of paper and you draw three boxes, you know, an inch by half an inch, three boxes on this piece of paper, and you take your timer, set your timer for 15 minutes, and you press go, and then you work and turning off your internet, turning off your cell phone, you know, ignoring your cell phone, whatever you need to do, where you just focus for 15 minutes as best you can on what you're doing. And then as soon as that alarm goes off after 15 minutes, you color in one of the boxes, you reset your alarm, and you get back to work. And you work some more, and the alarm goes off again, and you color in the second box, and you get back to work, reset your alarm. And then the third time it goes off, you color in the third box, and then you take a break. And every 50, what happens is every 15 minutes, you're getting a reward. It doesn't sound like much. It doesn't sound, it's one of those things that sounds like, that's not going to work. That's, you know, seriously, coloring in 3 blocks on a paper is actually going to make me focus better and make me enjoy my work more. This is one of those things that I want you to set aside your preconceived notions of what's going to work and what's not, and give this a try and find out for yourself whether or not, you know, after you color in that first box, when you're in your second, you know, block of 15 or your third block of 15, if you find yourself, find it easier to focus and you find yourself getting into flow. This is a, I call this focus magnet technique. And I also call it a, you know, in the program, I call it 3x15 because it's just three chunks of 15 minutes. What happens is you're getting frequent enough rewards for your brain to say, yeah, I like this. I want to keep doing this. There's a sort of carrot at the end of the, you know, there's a reward at the end of the, at the end of the, you know, several minutes that you're working that draws your attention, what you're doing. You know, the analogy that I use for this sometimes is, you had a horse and you want to get a horse to go, you know, run down the road. You could try forcing it. You could try, you know, whipping it. You could try physically pushing it. None of that stuff's going to work. If you toss an apple in that direction, he's going to run for the apple. You toss an apple for on the road, he's going to run again. You keep going. He, not only are you going to get there, but the horse is going to enjoy the experience. And this is what rewards do, is they turn on something in your brain that make the task itself enjoyable. It's not just that you, okay, fine, I'll do this and I'll get, you know, it's not like, you know, you mentioned, you know, food and dessert. That is, you know, sort of a similar thing in that, okay, I'll do this and then I'll get that, you know, I'll do the hard part and then I'll get the good part. And it actually works a little bit differently in that the hard, you know, the effort or the challenge that you're taking on becomes, again, just like, it becomes like a game when there's a reward waiting for you, just afterwards, a symbolic reward, becomes a lot of fun. So that's a technique that people can go out and try and they can use right away. It's tremendously powerful. Again, it's one of those things that is much more powerful than it sounds, but it really kicks in that part of your brain that makes it easier to focus and it really you know, I would say revives your drive. Program Drive for Drive. So that's the language that comes to mind, but it does, it makes you driven forward by your own internal joy of doing something, as opposed to trying to motivate yourself by setting deadlines and pressuring, you know, putting more pressure on yourself and, you know, telling a friend, okay, it'll be done by this day. And if it's not, you know, you can, here's a check and you can go cash it and donate it to least favorite political party or, you know, whatever it is. You hear about these types of pressure tactics. Those just make you resist and resent the things you have more, and they reinforce that belief that the things that you have to do are not fun. Yeah. Just like in school when I had to, you know, forced to read novel, it became much less fun. Whereas, you know, when you have the freedom to do it, you're doing it because you enjoy it for the natural rewards it gives you, then it, you know, you get your drive back. So,
yeah, definitely, man. Well, I tell you what, we got to wrap this up, but I want to make one point really quickly. And before I do that, guys, if you're interested in Zach's stuff, I mean, it's really good. It's called Find Your Focus. You just go to highgravitymail.com/findyourfocus. Really easy. I shortened it for you. One of the concepts that he touched on is very, very effective in influence and specifically influencing other people. And that is utilizing these reward loops. If you can give someone a result, then they will pay attention to you. So for instance, right now we're doing this podcast. Zach is giving you some techniques so you can go out and get a result. If you get that result, then what's going to happen? You're going to be more interested, you're going to pay more attention to what he has to say because he's already given you that reward. You've done that and it's been done. So these, a lot of these things, just like what we talk about in other realms, diet, fitness, stuff like that, this type of thing can not only be used internally for yourself, but a lot of these concepts, if you really think about it, can be used externally as well when it comes to interacting with other people. So I just kind of wanted to put that in because that kind of ties into a lot about what I talk about just on the site in general. So,
in fact, what I did when I created this, I created the system essentially for myself because I couldn't get anything done. Was I used principles that have of influence that people, you know, use to influence others, and I applied them to myself to basically trick myself, you know, to trick those parts of my brain that are resistant. So it's I talk about self leadership or self influence.
Yeah.
Using the psychology is, you know, you're saying pain is pain. Psychology is psychology.
Yeah.
You know, it's on yourself or it's on someone else. You can use these same techniques to, if you're leading a team, you can, you know, use rewards to incentivize them. It's much more powerful than punishment and, you know, pressure and that sort of thing. So, yeah, it's an excellent point.
Yeah, definitely, man. Well, look, Zach, I really, really appreciate you stopping by. Again, if you want to check out more of Zach's stuff, it's highgravitymail.com/findyourfocus. It's definitely good stuff. I suggest you take it out if this is something you want to get handled. Zach, you know, we're going to have some more conversations for sure. I'm sure we can dig deeper into some things, some new things that you're going to be figuring out and want to get out to the world. So the door is always open, my friend.
Thanks a lot, Brad.
Yeah. All right, so for Zach Berman, I'm Brad Howard, and that is your High Gravity Mail podcast.